Radio, irishradio.com, worldwide. Let's go to Belfast, and let's go to Minister for Finance, Maureen O'Mealor. First of all, Maureen, congratulations. This is our first opportunity to congratulate you as Minister for Finance, topping the polls in Northern Ireland. Maureen O'Mealor, Minister, you're very welcome.
It is. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward very much to the challenge. I've had lots of messages from our friends right across Irish America, and I suspect on my next visit it will be a ministerial visit where we try really and tap into that huge reservoir of support for the peace process and trying to, I suppose, spur on a prosperity process here. But thank you for your good wishes. We've just had the football match, the soccer match in France, where Ireland were beaten 3-0. So that's half of Belfast is depressed, but the other half is very strong Northern Ireland supporters. So they're doing well. So the glass is certainly half full.
Yeah, we got that news from Kevin O'Connor there. A lot of disappointment with respect to that, but I guess that's why they call it a game. So on to Italy, according to Kevin O'Connor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the glass half full is perhaps not a bad analogy for the job I have, because although it's very turbulent times, I think there are great opportunities ahead. I think we're in a stronger place in the north of Ireland perhaps than many people think, and if we could get a firm footing, and you know of course that there's a very important referendum vote on the 23rd of June in relation to our membership of the European Union, and that is likely to be enormously challenging if it is a vote to leave. So this week is going to tell the tale about really how difficult this job is going to be.
The significance of this Brexit, as it is of the British exit from the European Union, is not just one more item of importance. This has tremendous negative influence, and it will indeed change the relationship very much from Britain and Ireland, and obviously in Northern Ireland you're in the thick of it there. Tell us what the Maureen O'Mealor, Minister, tell us what the crux of the problem is and how this came about in the first place.
Well, and I'm very happy to call me Maureen. I've been seriously telling the 3,100 staff in the Department of Finance not to call me Minister. But that to say, under the protocols, the Minister of Finance and none of the ministers are allowed to engage in the Brexit debate, so we've been very circumspect about what we say. But having said that, one of the great ironies of the entire referendum debate, which has the potential to move us on a completely different trajectory if the vote is to leave, it comes about because of an internal argument in the Conservative Party in Britain, where David Cameron, to try and quell dissent in his own ranks before the May election, promised that if returned he would hold a referendum. And his thinking was that he would hold a referendum, he would win it, that was the vast majority would vote to stay in the European Union, and they would then strengthen his grip on the Tory party and move ahead. But of course it's been anything but that. It has led to splits in the Conservative Party, a very fractious debate, and the most recent polls indicate that a clear majority, and we can't always trust polls, Adrian, but the polls have put those who are in favour of this Brexit or in favour of leaving in a clear majority. So we travel in hope. As the Taoiseach has been campaigning in Britain asking the Irish in Britain to vote to stay, to remain. And almost every senior person on in national Irish politics and on the nationalist side here and the middle of the road parties are all asking people to vote to remain. And we will have a vote. And the Scottish will have a vote, and the Welsh will have a vote. But unfortunately, this referendum is really going to be decided by England. That's where the many millions are. And at the minute, it seems that they want to give the government a bit of a kicking, and this referendum will be the way to do it.
Now, I had already left Ireland, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, when the European Union was established in 1951, 665 years ago. And, you know, as it was closely connected with the European coal and steel community, six nations, first of all, got together. And it had to do with, you know, duty-free trade. The Treaty of Rome would have been 6 years later. And that created the European Economic Community, or the Common Market, as we know it. Now, Britain did not jump in right away, but they tried to join. President Charles de Gaulle of France, he vetoed that application in 63 and in 67. So Britain finally joined in 1973. The argument, it would appear, and the reason that the electorate in Britain is so het up about this has to do with the perception that Britain hasn't gotten much out of their involvement in the European Union, and in fact, they are, you know, picking up more than what some people say is their share of the European Union, of the continuing financial strains that you have with respect to, for instance, Greece and others, so that they figured they would be better off rowing their own boat. Would you say?
Well, it's interesting. I think that would be a rational analysis of why people would vote to leave. But in many ways, this goes back to the sense of alienation which working class and working families and middle class families in Britain feel in the wake of the 2007-2008 crash.
Right.
And I see that alienation in America as well. That people
yes,
feel
indeed.
That. You know, that those who were responsible for the crash continue to do well, that this trend towards globalization has not served the cities and towns across Britain or across America well. So there's a feeling that they want to blame someone, and that this referendum is a chance to blame part of it, at least, not only on the European community, but on the government. So it's not. I'm not sure it can be rationally analyzed.
Yeah.
That there's also feeling layered on top of that, of course, Adrian, is this feeling this colonial, I suppose, heart and nostalgia in Britain, where they feel that, you know, they are a superpower, and of course Britain is no longer a superpower. Mm-hmm. And whatever about what the British do, as you know, the equilibrium we have here in the peace process. I heard the Taoiseach saying, and I heard John Major, former Prime Minister, and Tony Blair, former Prime Minister, saying that to leave would, I don't know if they used the word endanger, but it would certainly be disturbing for the peace process. And it seems to me there is an equilibrium here, because not only has the European Union provided billions of dollars in peace support since the 90s and the first ceasefires, but it has also been a guarantor of the many treaties that have been signed in the period since, and it has underwritten and underpinned the advances in human rights that have been made here. So, and then add to that, Adrian, you know that when our ministers go to, from the executive in the north, go to America when they urge investment, and the vast majority of investment is from North America and from the U.S., they always emphasize that while this is a small island, that we are a small state of 1.8 million, that you will have access here to the richest market in the world, which is the 500 million people in the 28 states of the European Union. So I have to say that if you were to ask to write a speech for the economy minister or the first minister, Arlene Foster, the deputy first minister, Martin McGuinness, in a month's time, and the vote had been to leave, I think you would have trouble writing a compelling speech urging investment. But we'll have to apply ourselves. We'll have to see what it brings on Friday. But certainly, I think generally anyone involved in trying to bring investment here, I would say that the compelling argument for investment and why Chicago Mercantile Exchange is here, New York Stock Exchange, Wall Street and Liberty in Belfast is that it's not an island, but it's part of the European community and a gateway to that. So we will travel in hope, Adrian, because really I'm not sure what will happen in the vote, but the one thing I am sure of, it won't be settled by the Northern Irish, by the Welsh, or by the Scottish. It's going to be settled by the English, and the polls are saying that they want to get out. But so we'll see. So it'll certainly be an interesting time to be financing Australia, and that's for sure.
There are some similarities, and indeed you've touched on them with respect to anger, unrest with the government. Again, the rich get rich, the poor get poorer, as we see in our own political upcoming election here, where there are a great number of who do not want more of the same. They've been overlooked. They're not doing any better. And in fact, in Britain, it's pretty much the same way. Now, the alternative that we have here, is to choose somebody who definitely is a bit of a loose cannon, to say the least of it. In Britain, where the electorate is, and the polls, whether you like them or not, is somewhat of an indication of which way this is going to go. What are the political ramifications, compared to our own? Is this an anti-government, an anti-Cameron, an anti? Again, is it mostly working class that are in fact going to influence the decision?
Well, there's been disillusionment, and I think it's true to say it's not only working class, but interestingly, the Remain camp, in my opinion, have all the big guns. They've pulled out the big guns, like the heads of the business organisation, the heads of the banks, the top politicians. But I'm not sure that people are in a mood to listen to the great and the good, as it were. So I think the ground war, as they call it in political campaigning, has been lost. And every time I see another captain of industry saying, you need to vote to stay, I think that isn't convincing people on the ground. I suppose we're paying, and I think it's not that people are voting for something. I think they are voting against a system which they see as being rigged against them. And there is, as I see in the U.S., people feel that work conditions aren't as good. There's no longer jobs for life. It's very expensive to get to college. Our kids aren't doing as well as the generation that went before them. So for all sorts of reasons, I think that this is a Western world problem, if you wish. Leaving the EU isn't the way to solve it, that's for sure.
Hardly. Now, is some of the motivation here having to do with immigrants and immigrants fleeing some of the war-torn Europe? Is there some influence there in terms of people saying, well, what the hell are we picking up this tab for?
Well, there is absolutely, and I think we need to be sympathetic to that. We certainly need to listen to that. We shouldn't just turn our backs on working class communities when they feel that immigration is putting further burdens on them. And I think we need to point to our obligation to host refugees and to care for refugees and to build peace in places like the Middle East rather than create wars. And of course, you know, when we see these million people fleeing Syria, it all goes back to Iraq, which was the Western world's decision, and which was, of course, was catastrophic. I'm very much in favour of us discharging our obligations to refugees, especially these refugees who are fleeing for their lives. And you saw Angela Merkel of Germany brought in 1 million Syrians, which is absolutely incredible. But she also is coming under pressure because Germans are saying, and she's of the right, I suppose of the moderate right, but Germans are saying, well, we shouldn't have done this. It's too much, putting too much pressure on our system. And it's the same here, but in a much smaller degree. We have taken in a very small number of refugees. But in Britain, undoubtedly, as work conditions come under pressure and people can't get the type of contract they got 10 years ago or 20 years ago, as more people are working on minimum wage, I think there's a feeling that you blame the most recent arrival.
Absolutely.
And I think really the blame should go on the politicians and go on those who have created this race to the bottom.
Yeah.
But the language being used in Britain is very, very polarizing, with the leader of the Leave campaign showing a poster of Syrian refugees and saying we're going to be invaded. So it's ugly. It's very ugly politics. And as you know, some of the politics we are seeing from the US at the minute is very ugly as well.
Yeah, we have that much in common, that's for sure. Now, all campaigning has actually been suspended. We had our own horrific, worst ever slaughter, in Orlando. And Brexit has been the cause of the slaughter of a member of parliament, mother of two, Joe Cox, was killed. Is that going to make people think? Is that just another passing? I know that the campaign was suspended as a gesture, of mourning. But it also has somewhat become somewhat of a political issue as well. The debate about the tone of Britain's politics, is that something that will that change any of the numbers as you see it?
Well, first of all, our condolences and solidarity with the American people after the slaughter in Orlando. And we had a minute silence of our Sinn Féin group meets Monday morning, and we had the 28 MLAs for a minute silence. And then we had messages of condolence and solidarity in the Assembly itself. And I was in City Hall last night on signing the book Condolence. And the news, Adrian, out of America of successive terrible shootings is deeply distressing. The murder of Joe Cox was almost an American style story, if I may say that, because I know that you did have a congresswoman who was shot as well, and injured and survived, and I suppose that type of murder has also a shadow over American politics more than Irish or British politics or even European politics.
And
I really don't know what effect it will have. A bit like your own situation, there's talk that this is a deranged person, and I don't know how it will play. But events can change votes and how people vote. But you're right about the vitriol in politics. I've always thought that America was much more vitriolic and if I may use the word hate-filled rhetoric in terms of just how really polarized politics can be in the US. But that's happening, I think, right across Europe.
Yeah.
It's happening in Ireland. I think it's happening in Britain. And the internet, in my view, fuels that people say almost anything they wish. So it makes, I think, a lot of people very reluctant to get involved in politics. In this case, we don't know. We don't know what was behind this murder. But certainly, I don't really understand why. But I don't think it's very appealing that the language used in politics can be so extreme. I have a great friend, Father Des Wilson, a great community priest in Belfast, and he advised me once when I was asking him about a certain rival, or not, I thought it was a rival, but a bishop who had been giving Father Des a hard time because of his speeches on social justice and so on. And he said, never let a small thing like politics get in the way of friendship. I don't see much evidence of that nowadays. Really, people do let politics get in the way of any type of collegial approach. So will we roll back from that? There's no evidence coming out of America that people are getting any more disposed, any well disposed towards working in concert. It seems to be that the votes are and taking really absolutist positions and that your enemy, I mean, even the language is used about enemies and so on is, I think not helpful. I think it fuels this total alienation from politicians.
Okay, I also want to point out that there wasn't much reaction to Britain's pulling out of the European Union in the United States. However, in the last week. And now leading up to it, there seems, to be very strong objection coming from the United States from an economic standpoint, that the U.S. seems to become very much involved and is encouraging Britain to stay in the European Union. There is an implication here that the U.S. is also nervous about the possibility of Britain withdrawing from the European Union. I don't know whether there's time actually to get that message across, but definitely the U.S. are not taking this lightly at all.
Yeah, and I think everyone presumed this would just go by rote, that a referendum would be called, that people would vote to stay in, and it would be business as usual. I think the penny has been dropping that, in fact, that may not happen, as happened in the Republic of Ireland in the South, in EU referendums that people decided that they wouldn't take the advice of all the parties. And you even saw that recently in terms of the referendum on the future of the Senate, Senate in Ireland, and people went against the advice of the parties and decided to keep it. The problem, I think, with the intervention of America is that it's coming again from the people at the top. And I really don't know what President Obama's standing is in Britain, but if this is a response and a reaction to those in authority, voices of authority from America or anywhere else saying this is a bad idea, in fact, in my view, aren't going to cut it because it's, the people are saying, well they are the great and the good, and that is what they would say anyway. So Cameron has made his bed. If he loses this, he's out of power. I think it would be unimaginable that the British Prime Minister would continue in post if he loses this referendum. So that's going to be destabilizing. Yeah.
Isn't it true, though, that, in hindsight, that was not a good political move for Cameron anyway? That was a ferocious gamble and one that's going to come back to haunt him.
Well, and we have argued here, it's been argued by many people, that if the majority in the north of Ireland vote to stay in, then we should be allowed to stay. And remember, the Good Friday Agreement is an international agreement between the Irish government and the what they call the UK government, which has been rubber stamped, as it were, by the EU. In our view, it's contravention of these international treaties and the agreements, and it's a total betrayal of the peace process
Absolutely.
To pull us out to put it to the north out of the EU. And it's the same with the Scottish, of course. And I was in Scotland
and yes, and indeed it will have Scotland. You know, they will rethink their own position as well. There's a lot to lose and a lot to gain, and hopefully, you know, if it wouldn't hurt at this stage of the game if our President Obama were to make the case, obviously, that this also very much involves the economics of the United States, and let's hope it goes the right way. All right.
Well, and I would really be very depressing if on your next visit to Ireland that you flew in either to Knock or flew into Shannon or flew into Dublin, came up to the border and there were checkpoints on the border again.
Again.
Wouldn't that be a setback?
It's unbearable. We wouldn't want to think of it. Listen, we keep our fingers crossed. We'll say a prayer, and hopefully next Thursday we'll bring something which will be good for Northern Ireland and, in fact, good for Britain and the United States as well. Thank you, Minister for Finance, Máirtín Ó-Maolaodha.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Weighing in on what the Council's consequences will be next Thursday. We again hope that Britain will stay in the European Union, and despite the polls, maybe there's a miracle out there as well. Tomorrow,